outside of the rooms rather, my life today is beyond my wildest dreams. And I feel like I'm going to blow your eardrum out if I have this thing right in front of me. You know what I'm saying? People used to call me JMX growing up. You know what I'm saying? I got a deep voice. And I talk real fast. So if you listen real slow, I apologize on my behalf already. I'm just like super blessed. This thing's super bright too, because I feel like I'm getting interrogated. I've been interrogated a few times in my life. I'm just super blessed to be alive today, right? I haven't found it necessary to put anything in my body stronger than a leave since June the 11th of 2011. And that's really nothing that I've done on my own. That was just a divine act on God's behalf. I didn't pick that day to get sober. It was just a remarkable experience on how I got sober, and I'll come to tell you that story. And before I begin, I heard this pastor one time say this, and I am a pastor for a trade, so don't throw no stones at me yet, but that's what I do for a living. I didn't think I was going to become a pastor. I became a pastor as I was in the walk through the 12 steps, and lo and behold, that's what God had in store for me. And I don't have a monopoly on God. What I have is merely an approach that worked for me. The big book says it too. It says, however small of a concept of God that you think that you have, we feel that it's a good beginning. It's enough to make the approach. However small of a concept you have, that is good enough. It gets you in the door. And I want to talk about God a lot when I speak, because if I'm not talking about God, then I'm really doing a disservice to the God that I follow and the one that you should be. It's really why I'm still breathing today. There's no doubt about it. I love the part when it's like working with others or whatever, when you sit down with them and it says you don't have to fully believe. All you have to say is that I'm just willing to believe. And that's what the big book says. And so like I get to sit down with these guys that were broken just like me, and like I emphatically tell them that they're well on their way, because that's what the book says. And I'm like, do you believe in God? And they're like, no, not yet. I'm like, are you just willing to believe in God? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, let's go then, baby. And then they get all crazy. I'm like, well, it says emphatically, right? I'm just following directions. They probably don't even call me back for another sponsor. You know? I mean, beyond your wildest dreams. That's what they talked about when I got here. Beyond your wildest dreams. I didn't know that you could actually execute daily dreams on a daily basis in AA by going through the 12 steps. So just getting sober, that was like the reason why I came into the room. Behind that is this life that is just far greater than anything you can imagine. And that's what the big book actually talks about. It says that God's plans and designs are far greater than your own. And if you're anything like me with the ego the size of Texas, the plans that I have for myself are revolutionary. And to think that God's is even better, mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. And the only thing I have to do is get out of the way and let him. That's the deal here. Right? I haven't done everything perfectly in coming up on 12 years. I do a lot of things that are wrong. My man was butchering the name of the home group. Well, don't feel bad. I just picked it up last week. You know what I mean? My homie over here to the right don't even got one. So look at him first. I'm going to keep it a buck with you. It's crazy because I moved 2 years ago. I started this group with me and a couple of my buddies. It's called Media Speakers Group in Delco. Any Delco cats or cats? There we go. I see you back there. Delco in the house, baby. Let's go. I feel right at home now. Me and my buddies, we started this one in Delaware County, and it's been like probably 8 years or something like that. It's been going on, and I loved it so much. And my wife, I'm from the hood. She's from the woods. That's what I always say. She's from like Malvern. It's really not the woods, but she's a little country girl. You know what I'm saying? They like knit stuff for you for winter. You know what I mean? I'm like buying like jewelry for her. She's like, I made you this hat. And I'm like, well, this is a bad deal, but, but no, it's the truth. So she got me to move to Chester County, and I was like fighting it tooth and nail. She's like, yo, you gotta move to Chester County. And I'm like, I lived in North Philly for 17, 18 years, and I was like, I'm not moving nowhere near there. I'm gonna get locked up. She's like, you got like 10 years sober, bro. Like, what are you talking about? So she lured me into it. And we moved there. And for the past 2 years, I've been in and out trying to find a home group, right? Because I was so caught on this one group that I helped start. And it's just like, yo, you got to let it go. You got to let it go. Because like what happened was I wasn't going to anything, right? And it's like, I'm telling my wife, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go try this one out. And I'll bounce around and all these other things. And she opened up the book and she's like, go to Dalesford Abbey. It's up the street from here. I'm like, all right, cool. So I went up there and I texted her. I'm not even going to lie. This was only like 2 weeks ago, right? I'm telling on myself. But I texted her. I said, man, a lot of these people are old in here, Barbie. That's my wife's name. She said, and you're not young, so what's that say? the point is that I'm getting old in AA, you know? And I'm really grateful, right, that I am, because I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here right now. And I have an amazing life. And the reason that I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in 2012, I did a year incarcerated. It wasn't the first time I was incarcerated. God willing, it'll be the last. But the reason that I came here is because that I couldn't stop drinking. You know what I mean? Like, for the longest time, I used to go to, I wasn't really like a treatment center guy. I was more of an institutionalized, incarcerated kind of person. I did like 2 years when I was turning 17, tried as an adult. I went away because of my alcoholism. And I remember like coming home and drinking, not wanting to, right? Against but the best judgment that I ever had. I was like, I know this is wrong, but I just couldn't stop drinking. And I remember my mom knocking on the bathroom door when I'm throwing up because I'm violently sick. And she used to say, "What's wrong with you? What is wrong with you?" And I was just so beaten and broken. The only thing I could say to her is, "I don't know. I don't know." You know what I mean? Like, I had no idea. I didn't even know what an alcoholic was. You know, I knew I grew up in a broken home. You hear that a lot in AA. But I just didn't understand the depth and weight of what alcoholism really was. And I could remember as an early age, my father, he died from this disease. I was sober when he did, but I remember when we were growing up in my household, I heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. And like, and what I'm saying is like, it's so important, right? Not to come behind a podium and speak. Like, yeah, carrying a message, it's super important. I'm not knocking it. I took a hiatus from talking. I get paid to talk. My wife would probably pay me to shut up a little bit, but you know, so it's crazy, but I'm just saying, you know, I remember at an early age, my father drinking and God rest his soul. Good, bad, or indifferent, this is who God had intended to be my dad. And I remember my dad going to these meetings and him coming home. And the crazy part was my dad had suffered from a lot of things, and anger and rage were some of that, part of that. And my mom had it worse than me. So don't let me paint a picture of I'm a victim, because I'm definitely not. But, you know, the state of Pennsylvania thought it was necessary for them to take me away from him at the age of 13 and put me in foster care. And that was just a part of my experience. But I remember when I was like 10, 11 years old and seeing my dad go to these things called Alcoholics Anonymous and him going there and coming home and being so violent that the only time that my family ever had relief is when my dad would actually go get drunk. So that's why I know how vital it is when you see somebody coming through that door. Right? And they're just, their head is down and they just look full of shame and they just look completely broken, that somebody that has a solution goes up to them and says, "Hey, there is a way out." See, I always look at like, AA meetings as like a pep rally for God. You know what I'm saying? Like that's how I look at it. And I'm like, yo, I used to be a loser and now I'm less of one. You know what I mean? Like that, I'm still can be some days, but I'm less than I used to be. Right? And I haven't thought it necessary to pick up a drink. Praise God. Right? Like that's like the bar's real low for a cat like me. I remember my mom used to be running around town and stuff, like, you know, a normal mom, like, "Yo, how's your son doing? He's going off to college and stuff." I mean, and my mom would be like, "Well, he's home on parole, you know?" like the bar was real low. And I had other brothers too, all of us touched the penitentiary. They didn't suffer from what I'm suffering from, but you know, we weren't no Boy Scouts. But I just remember growing up in this turbulent home in this crazy environment. And my dad would come home and these things would happen and he would be super violent. And it was just a mess, right? My life was just a crazy, crazy mess. And I would have all these things happen to me and I would take them with me and just continue to lash out and drink more and these other things. And I mean, I knew that I was not normal in regards to the way that alcohol affected me, you know? Later on, I just never, clear as day, Pennypacker Park in Northeast Philadelphia, if anybody knows where that's at. I remember clear as day sitting down with my sponsor, my first sponsor. I've been having the same sponsor for a long time now, but this was my first one. And I still see him. He actually just came to one of my events that my buddy was with me at. But he sat me down at Pennypacker Park. And I was already a convicted felon twice. I was like stabbed in jail. Like, I'm not telling you this stuff because like, you know, and I, you know, whatever. I was just, it's the truth. And really, I thought I was some tough guy, but really I was just a scared little boy that missed some hugs from his dad. And I wasn't ready to say that to him at that moment. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, I was putting for adoption cause, you know what I'm saying? I got two older brothers. One was shot. I was stabbed, bro. And he's like, yeah, he's like, dude, that sounds real rough, bub. Real rough. It's not why you're drinking, though. And I was so angry. I was so angry. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, yo, like the stuff that happened to you, like, is unique to you. Just like the stuff that happened to me is unique to me. Just like it is unique to you. But if you're anything like the big book talks about, the only thing that ties us together is the way that alcohol affects us. And he told me that. And he said, listen, if you have a mental obsession over alcohol, have you ever had a mental obsession over alcohol? I'm like, yeah, always. He's like, when did it happen? He's like, go through the times. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah. Like, bro, I remember coming home from this little thing that I just did. It's called a prison sentence. But I remember, you know, trying to like gloss over that real quick. But I would come home and like, I'm on parole and I'm starting to, you know, get this thing called a job. You know what I'm saying? And this is without step work. I'm like, I'm not going there with all those losers, dog. I ain't doing all that. And like, I was sit in the back because I had to be there and I would judge everybody. But I remember sitting there clear as day, 6 months sober, right? And I was telling my sponsor the story and I was like, I'm 6 months sober and I'm sitting in the house. And then like, you know, I think about a drink for some reason when things were going good, right? Things were going real good. And then he opened up to this part in the big book, which I hated, right? And I still hate it. And it says, suddenly. I hate that word. Suddenly, you know what I'm saying? Like, suddenly the thought crosses his mind. And I'm like, no, that's me, bro. And I'm like, and I was so convicted because I didn't want it to be. I wanted to be everybody else's fault. I wanted to be because I was put in foster care and I, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to be like, because if my mom only loved me the way that I needed to be loved, you know what I mean? My mom was a saint, dude. I was a psychopath, dude. And that's just the bare facts. But he was like, yeah, so this mental obsession would happen. And then after you succumb to the obsession, which you always did, you would put a drink into your body. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, how many did you drink? I'm like, dude, I wake up like 3 years later on parole. And he's like, yeah, that's that physical allergy. And last but not least, he started talking to me about this spiritual malady, the spiritual disease that I was suffering from, which he told me, he's like, yo, if you don't do this work, bro, if you don't do this, you will die. He didn't sugarcoat it and say like, you know, you might go back out and drink and do these other things. He's like, I don't know how much, you know, chances you got left, my guy. You know what I mean? He's like, you've been to prison. You've been to foster care. You've already died twice at this point. What else is left for you, cuz? And it was the truth. It was the absolute truth. And I remember him taking me through that doctor's opinion and realizing about myself that this was me. And then he started reading again. And I was like, and every turn of the page, I'm like, oh, dude, this is terrible, bro. You know, I wanted to tap out, like, make it stop, bro. You know what I'm saying? I was ready to tap out. And the crazy part was he started getting to the thing about, you know, you're a prey to misery and depression. Anybody ever feel like that, dude? You know, and then and this might describe you right now. It can describe me on any given day. It says they are restless. Well, after daylight savings, Joan, you know what I'm saying? I'm definitely getting older. You know what I mean? I needed a nappy. But you're restless, irritable, and never content. That's me in my natural state without God. Yeah, I mean, I remember the other day I called up my sponsor. I'm just telling him myself. I'm like, yo, what's up, bub? He's like, listen. I was like, yo, this house is dirty, cuz. He's like, did you ever think about cleaning it? I'm like, bro, I work so many jobs, you know? He's like, who are you, Genghis Khan, bro? You can pick up a Barilla pad. And I'm like, yo, this is a pretty easy solution. Still dirty, though, buddy. I know, I'm like, yeah. But they talked about this stuff in the book when I was sitting down with him on the bench. And he started talking about how relationships. And I started looking at the relationships that I had in my life. It says, relationships are destroyed. Sweet relationships. They are dead. And then he came to this part, which I absolutely love in the big book. I believe it's in the family afterward. No. This is before that. This is actually into the solution, I believe. And it says this. It says passing, and don't miss this. Passing all understanding is the patience that wives and mothers had with the alcoholic. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today. And then it follows it up, or would perhaps be dead. Whew. If a mother's love could have got me sober, you'd have a different speaker. And for the longest time, I thought it was different. My mom accepted me into her life so many times. And she's a tough woman, dude. Super tough. I was not no picnic as a kid. Probably not a picnic as a man, but yeah, I'm like a snack now, not a picnic. You know what I mean? But a whole snack. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You gotta make it funny up here. But I think about that, and I think about the times in my life that I continued to hurt her and rob her of sleep, pride, possessions, you name it. I took it. Sweet relationships are dead. Relationships are uprooted. They are broken as a result of my alcoholism. And that's something that I had to take a look at, because I remember clearly, you know, and this is me not understanding what alcoholism was, not having had any step work in my life. I know what it looks like with me without God in my life, and it is not a pretty picture. It is not a pretty picture. And I remember this one time I came home from a place called CFCF in Philadelphia, and it's not the place to be, but I've been there multiple times. And I remember my stepfather, you know, my dad was out ripping and running, my crazy divorce, all these terrible things had happened, which I won't get into, but you know, my mom remarried, and the crazy part is this guy Jim that she married was a Vietnam War veteran. An amazing man. He had integrity, and he loved me for me, which I didn't even never felt lovable in my entire life. And I remember vividly him allowing me back into his house when I became 19 years old, when I came home. And I remember sitting in the room, and I had a little job at the time. I wasn't doing anything in AA, and I was just hanging out. And then that suddenly part kicks back on. And I remember sober going down my mom's hallway to her room while she is at work with my stepdad to pick the lock on her door. I remember that. I remember it. I remember the tears coming down my face, not wanting to do it, but just not having the power not to. I was getting through that door, and I did. It was a hollow core. It was pretty easy, but I got through the door. And then I picked the safe that they had, and I robbed them. The only problem my stepfather ever had is that he married my mom, who had a son like me. The only problem my mother ever had was that she had a son like me. And I was in and out of their lives, and this would continue to happen until 2011. But and I'll get to how I got sober and talk about all the amazing things that God has done in my life. I mean, I could talk about that for a long time. And I'm just grateful to draw a sober breath today. And that's still beyond my wildest dreams, right? That's the greatest gift that God has ever given me, that I don't have an obsession. You know, I've been having the privilege of working in different settings throughout my life, mostly around other people who are suffering from alcoholism. And the revolving door that I see, it's heartbreaking. And it's getting worse. I hear about somebody dying every week. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't. And I think that's why, you know, all of us here have a greater calling for our lives than the one that we think that we have. And I know that God has something amazing store in your life right now. And that's just a fact. And I remember in I was on the run from law enforcement in 2011. The last time I saw my mom is she works at this school, and it was a little further up from Kensington. And I was with my homie or whatever, and I asked him to drive me up there because I was super sick. And I went to I'll never forget this. I know 3:30 is when the bell goes off and she comes out to go out with her coworkers to leave. And I was sitting there behind the dumpster, right? And I hear the bell, bing. And this is like 2009. I'm on the run. I look terrible. And I come crawling out from behind the dumpster like the Crypt Keeper. Like 28 days later. Ma! I haven't seen this woman in like a year and a half. Ma! Ma! And her coworkers and her friends are like, oh my God. I'm like, you got $20? And she's like, oh. She's like, I'm going to call the cops on you. And I was like, can I still get the 20? Throw it in the dumpster, I'll get it. I didn't even care. But the brokenness on my mom is incomprehensible, pitiful demoralization. To see her youngest son crawl out from behind the dumpster asking for $20. And that was the last time I saw my mom for over 18 months, easily over 18 months. And I'll talk about in 2011, I found myself homeless again. And I'm not talking about couch surfing homeless like your friends and stuff, like hanging out, playing Xbox. That wasn't the kind of homeless that I'm referring to. Like, I was eating out of like dumpsters and stuff like that. I was real homeless. And I had nowhere to go. And I was a shell of a human being. And God's garden of grace, a broken tree can bear fruit. Because I was walking down the street after I did something on June 10th of 2011, and I saw this church, and it was in North Philadelphia, and on the thing it said free pepperoni pizza. I'm not kidding. And if it's free, it's for me, especially because I like pizza. So I was like, you know what? And I wasn't sick. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't sick. So I was like, let me just go down into this basement and grab a couple slices. You know what I'm saying? A different kind of slice than I'm used to. And so I ate a different kind of slice. And so I walked down there, and I sit in the, they're like, yo, the pizza. It was like a Spanish church. And I'm not Puerto Rican. I'm Puerto Rican because I was raised around Puerto Rican. So I say I'm Puerto Rican. I'm not Puerto Rican. And so I went down into this basement, and I'm the only white boy sitting in the back, but I'm sitting there crushing those back in the day Pizza Hut stuff crust. You know, I'm eating that backwards. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, everything's backwards in God's world, especially pizza. So, so I'm eating this pizza, and I'm in there, and I see this little Spanish pastor, handlebar mustache. John was plush. I ain't even gonna lie, but he was down there. Yo, I can see his big. I can see the whiskers right now. But yo, he was down there, and he was like spitting Spanish, and I don't know no Spanish. You know, I know like Montega and some other stuff, but he's like, yo, he's down there. He's down there, and he's crushing it. And like, I'm like feeling cool. I'm like, cool. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So I'm sitting there eating the pizza, and then all of a sudden he switches gears. Like, it's a complete like 180, and he starts looking right at me, and I'm in the back. He starts walking closer. I'm like, yeah, like benching back with the pizza, and he starts talking about this God that was foreign to me. He starts talking about this God who was ready to redeem me, who was ready to forgive me. It doesn't matter what I've ever done. That God was calling me home, and he's about to do an amazing work in your life. He said he's going to turn these ragged bones into beautiful flesh. He's going to turn this heart of stone into a heart of flesh. He's going to do something amazing in your life, is what he said. And I did what any person would have done. I took a couple slices and I left. Yo. I'm like walking back to the Abando on Cambria Street, like, wow, that was intense. You know, eating my pizza. I'm like, geez, what's wrong with that guy? I was like, yo. Poppy God, calm down, cuz, you know what I'm saying? Jeez, relax, dog. I know I'm homeless, but jeez. And, but seriously, like, he really said that. And I was walking, it is funny, but it's the truth. I really was thinking, I'm like, damn, what was up with that cat, dude? What's he on? Like, you know what I mean? What block did you go to, cuz? You know what I mean? Tell me about it. And I was walking back to Cambria Street, and I was like, just thinking about this Puerto Rican pastor, full of stuff crust. And I walk into the abandoned house and nothing happened. And I had alcohol on me for the next day. And so I woke up June 11th of 2011 sitting there in an abandoned house running with this guy. Me and this guy were running buddies. And I don't know. Something came over me, right? And what I call, it was absolutely the Spirit of God came into my life on the 10th. And the effectual call, which means the time that God has called me to the point at where I'm at right now, happened way before I even asked God for help. See, because God has been with me a long time. And when I look back and I can see the instances in my life that he was there, I just refuse to look at it. Or maybe I was just blind by selfishness. That's what they say the core root of our disease is. Selfishness and self-centeredness. Right? I love how Bill Wilson put that in there. He says, is selfishness and self-centeredness, though they usually don't think so. I hate that part. You know what I mean? I'm reading that part and I'm like, yeah, he's like, he's selfish and self-centered. I ain't me. I'm pretty good. I give out stuff crust. Then he follows it up, but he usually doesn't think so. See, I'm the last person to know how selfish I really am. And I remember sitting there vividly, sitting in this abandoned house, hearing this Puerto Rican pastor, no more pizza, no nothing left on the table. But I figured I would ask my runner buddy if I could use his phone. And he said, yeah, he had a Motorola StarTag. Anybody remember them, Jones? You know what I'm saying? All right. Flip joint. And he's like, yo, I only got like 8 minutes left on it. I said, wow, you don't got an unlimited plane? He's like, yeah. He's like, you don't even got a phone, and we're homeless, dude. I'm like, yeah, good point. It was like that version of like the modern Obama phone. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sitting there in this abandoned house, and I called my mom, not for anything, but just to hear a familiar voice on the other end. That's how terrible my life was. I just wanted to hear somebody who loved me, and I know my mom always loved me, always. In spite of who I was, my mom always loved me. I know that. And my stepfather answered the phone. And he says to my mom, I could hear him. He said, Judy, your son's on the phone. And I haven't seen her since the dumpster day. We're going back a little bit, but I haven't seen her in like 18 months to 2 years. And I hear her vividly say, I don't want to speak to him. Tell him I'm prepared to bury him. And I deserved it. I deserved far less than I got. I hear people say they earned their seat in AA, and God bless them, but not for me. I hurt a lot of people to get here. I hurt a lot of people. And my stepfather altered the course of my life forever. He says, I know I'm not your dad, but I sure as heck do love you like I am. And he said, I'll never turn my back on you. And I love you, Jason. It was the first time that a man ever said that he loved me. And he hung up the phone. The smallest words of love driven by the power of God can save somebody's life. The smallest words of love driven by the power of God can save somebody's life. I don't care if you got 1 day or 100 years here. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you believe in God or you just believe in good. Here in AA, we believe in you, especially if you're a newcomer and an old timer. I don't want to exclude you. Yeah, it kind of sounded crazy, but we don't care if you believe in God or you just believe in good. We believe in you. You know, I don't have a monopoly on this thing. You come to my church, you're going to hear a different message. That's a fact. But not here in AA. You know what I mean? Anybody can come. The spirit of the universe is broad and roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive. All-inclusive, never exclusive. It's not forbidden to any man or woman who desperately seeks God. See that word, desperately. How desperate are you? And right there in this abandoned house, I had this crazy out-of-body experience because all I could hear is this Puerto Rican pastor talking about this foreign God who I didn't believe in, who said he was going to redeem me and that he was going to take out my heart of stone and give me a heart of flesh. And I said the greatest prayer that I've ever said then until now. God, I need help. And thank God, God doesn't do hard terms. God doesn't do hard terms. That's the conundrum about AA. You can have as much of AA and God as you want. But the minute you stop, you go back. Yeah, it sucks. I didn't write it. Everybody's like, man, this part hurts. I know. The spiritual life is broad and roomy, and you can have as much of it as you want. But the minute you stop, you'll get restless. You'll get irritable. and you won't be content with anything. And the crazy part is, you'll have everything. That's the crazy thing. I have everything you could want in AA. But God does not live at Wells Fargo. God does not live in your new car. And add that list ad infinitum. God is free. God is great. And you can have as much of him as you want. And I did that minute. I hung the phone up and I told my buddy, you only got 3 minutes left. Sorry about that. And I gave him the alcohol. And I was on the run. And I did what any sober, smart person would do at that time. I turned myself in to the authorities that served the best food. And which was Montgomery County, by the way. It was crazy. It was nuts. I walked over City Line Ave one time from West Philly, it's called. Everybody know West Philly. I crossed over City Line Avenue. It becomes like Lower Marion, bro. I blew a tire. They got me for conspiracy. I did a conspiracy home in three. Till then, look out for the whole family. You know what I'm saying? That's Biggie, not me. But I got to give credit. But the crazy part is I went out there, and they locked me up. And then I was on parole since I was like 12 out there, dude. It was crazy. Like, I couldn't walk this bad boy off, dude. It was nuts. They're like, "We're giving you 10 years probation." I'm like, "What?" I was like, "Jeez, I didn't even have the drugs on me. It was somebody else." But I mean, okay, they found me guilty. I'm like, "Bro, if this was Philly, I would have spanked that." But neither here nor there. I turn myself. I walk in to a place called Ross Road. That was I've never been there either. That's the crazy part. I'd like call the probation department. I never went. You know, after court and after you do jail time, you're supposed to go see him. I never did ever to anyone. So I'm like, you know, I'm just going to go turn myself in. And because I did time there, and it was like kind of Camp Cupcake, got a little weight bench, a little honey buns, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, bang, I'm going to go to that one. So I'm like, yo, where's your probation department? And they told me. So I walk up this hill and I go inside and I tap on the window, and the lady who's typing looks up to me and she's like, "Oh my gosh." Hey, you know what I mean? I was a sight for sore eyes, but no, straight up. I look like Forrest Gump when he stopped running. You know what I'm saying? I'm like Jenna. I'm like at the front. I got the beard down to here. I haven't showered in weeks. Fingernails black, dog. You strike me down if I'm lying. You can hit the gym. I have black fingernails, cuz. You know, it was nuts. And I was like, yo, my name's Jason. I'm here to turn myself in. And she says, "You can't do that here. You got to go down to the courthouse." And I was like, "For real?" And I just think she just didn't want to touch me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really don't, dude. I had patches on my arms and stuff. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, yeah. It was like Fucci, not Gucci. But I was like, anyway. So I was leaving. And this crazy out-of-body experience, this is how I know spiritual experiences are only temporary. I was leaving. And out walks this huge probation officer with a gun and everything. And he says, "Yo, I heard your story behind the counter, right? You got a warrant. And I'll take you to jail today. Right now." He says, "Or you can leave. And I promise you, I'm not going to chase you." That's what he said. Because I was leaving. And he said, "Excuse me." And I turned around. And he put his hands on my shoulder. And I started to cry like a baby. That was the hand of God. The big book says it best. It says, what seems to be the flimsy reed is actually the loving hand of God. And that seemed like a flimsy reed. Turn yourself in. Like, what was I even doing there? Was what my mindset was. And the crazy part is, when he put his hands on me and I started crying like a baby, it was right in the part where everybody's about to go see everybody. And I turn around and I told all the other convicts, "These are tears of joy because I love jail." Just in case. I'm like, kidding. Just in case they violate it. You know what I'm saying? They're like, "Oh, that's that kid, that sweet boy that was crying in the center." I'm like, "No, I'm only kidding." But I smoked a Newport Hundo in the back of his seat going there too, because I thought I was living high on the hog. And all this stuff seemed like a whirlwind all the same day. And they put me into this holding cell. And as soon as the door shut behind me, I got immediately sick. You know what I'm saying? It was like bong. And I was like, "Oh my God, what did I just do? This is a bad idea. You didn't even get drunk today, dog. What are you doing?" Ain't no turning back now. And at the other end, there was this Life Recovery Bible. I still got it at my house. And this is, I knew God was calling me to something more. And I opened it up and it said Isaiah 41:10. It said, "Fear not, do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I'm going to help you and uphold you with my righteous right hand." And there, right then and there, I knew that God was saving me to save me. Yes, but he was also saving me to run around and talk about the age of miracles that's still upon us. And I get to see people liberated from this disease that wants them dead on a daily basis here, but they are free people. They are liberated in more ways than one. And that's the juice. That's why I live, right? To run around and talk about how God is real and God is good and God is going to do an amazing work in your life. I just ain't got the handlebar mustache like the pastor did. You know what I'm saying? And that's where my life took me. So all these crazy and remarkable things happened while I was incarcerated. I was supposed to do 2 years, got out in one. You know, praise God for that. And I turned I went back to Kensington to this, you know, crazy recovery house. My homie owned it. I've known him for a long time. And I started hitting the ground, and I met my sponsor that I was telling you about. And I started going through this, you know, work called the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was feeling great. My mom was back in my life. That was crazy because I remember writing to her when I was incarcerated. She never wrote me a letter. And then my cellie asked me, he's like, yo, you're a Christian now. Why don't you pray for over it? And I did. And I sent her this amazing letter. And I'm like, Mom, I love you. You know what I mean? And I need some money. You know, and like, you know what I'm saying? I'm starving in this joint, dude. But, you know, it was crazy. And she wrote me back, and my cellie's like, yo, read it to me, man. And I'm like, opening up my letter, I'm like, yeah, baby, you know what I'm saying? Because he was like praying with me over this. And then my mom was like, dear Jason, I'm like, see that, bro? You know what I'm saying? Dear, I'm her dear, pop. I mean, and it's like, ever since you were a boy, I'm like, and it's getting better. Hey, you have literally took everything from me. I'm like what? She's like, you stole this from me. You stole that. And he's like, and I'm like reading it, and my man's grabbing his commissary like, damn, dog, what did you do? I'm like, I'm a Christian. I don't steal. But can you share that honey bun? You know what I mean? My stuff, my sack is light this week. Come on, pop. But the point was, she wrote me back, and slowly I started repairing that. She wouldn't see me until I was 2 years sober, which is fine. And all these crazy, remarkable things happen, and I started taking people through the 12 steps. The crazy part down there, a lot of people in the recovery houses are still banged up. And I used to go around and Newports and well, actually it was like Mavericks. You know what I'm saying? I don't smoke no more. But the Mavericks, I used to grab, like little things of Mavericks, a couple, cartons, packs, whatever. And I used to bring them over to the recovery house and just lay them on the table. You know what I'm saying? You got the old dudes in there coming back from the clinic, like, oh, Jay's back. You know what I'm saying? They didn't even care, but I was reading this book. I'm like, you know what I mean? I said, deep down in every man, woman and child is a fundamental idea of God. They're over there like, I'm like, yo, whatever. We're going to get through this, baby. You know what I'm saying? And, yeah, you know, their cigarettes will go out. I light it for them. yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, don't leave me yet. This crazy, remarkable thing happened. I started taking people through these 12 steps, and like crazy stuff was going amazingly well for me. And, you know, and then I was coming home, I was working at this dead-end job, and I've been blessed. Now I own a couple, several businesses that are very successful. Praise God for that. I've always chased a bag, you know what I mean, if you will, for is what these little young bucks say now. But again, and everything I have is a direct result of me helping somebody else. I know that sponsoring other people is the great equalizer here, because I've done a lot of different things wrong, but I've never not had my hand out sponsoring other guys. And that's the facts. Everything I have is a direct result of me getting uncomfortable for somebody else in AA. And that's just the truth. And if you haven't gotten anything from my message, make sure you get that. Okay? That's very, very important. Very, very important. And I remember my mom asked me to move back home because I was working this dead-end job, and I got pistol whipped down there. Second time I was pistol whipped. First time I didn't deserve it. And I was robbed. And she was like, will you move up to – she lived in Delco, you know what I'm saying? So I was like, I'm going to go back to Delco. And I was – and so whatever, a couple bad relationships that I got in. You know how they say you should stay by yourself? I mean, it's very, very, very good advice. And, like, I didn't, you know what I mean? And, like, so whatever, I was in and out of different relationships and acting as a – I wasn't a pastor yet. And I always say that, well, I wasn't a pastor yet. Well, you knew better. You were a crumb. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, my buddy used to call me the mangler when it came to relationships. And so I was like, you know, I'm gonna be by myself. I mean, he's worse than me, so I don't know what you want to call him. Shredder. You know, but, you know, so, like, I stayed by myself. My sponsor was like, yo, stay by yourself for, like, a year. And I got asked to speak at this God As I Understand It meeting in Westchester, in Chester County. And I was like, yeah, I'll go do it. And, like, halfway there, my man was like, yo, you know, at first he coerced me to go because he said there was this kid there. He's like, yo, there's some guy there that wants you to sponsor him. And I thought it was kind of strange because I didn't really know a lot of Chester County and Westchester people. But I was like, you know what? Shh, name rings bells like Sunday at 12, babe. I'm like, I knew this day would come. I knew this day would come. My name's getting around in Chester County. And I was like, bet, pick me up, dude. You know, so he picked me up and he's like, yo, halfway there, he's like, bro, ain't nobody there. Nobody knows you out there, dog. And I was super upset. He's like, ain't nobody out there for you to help. I'm like, geez. And lo and behold, there was somebody there who was supposed to get help, and it was me. And I spoke at this God As I Understand a meeting, and I was celibate, for lack of a better term. And when I was done, I got this tap on the shoulder, and I turned around, and there was this cute little country hippie chick with this flower dress on. And she was like, "Hey, dude!" And, you know, I'm a street dude, so I had to throw it on extra white. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, hey, how are ya? Nice to meet ya. Fancy seeing you here, you know? She's like, geez. She's like, "Yo, I actually heard you speak multiple times in Philadelphia." And I said, "You don't say." And she said, "You radiate the love of God from you." And I definitely don't have skills like that because I just spill stuff on me. And I said something like, "You smile, puppy dogs, kiss rainbows." I don't know. It worked, though, because she's my wife for coming up on 9 years. You know what I'm saying? And guess what? She wants me home tonight, you know, which is crazy. I'm truly blessed that as the older I get, the more in love I am with her. My wife sponsors other women. She has had this experience. She's the worship leader at our church. We're in ministry together. We serve side by side one another. And I see the best of God in my wife. I'm really blessed with her. That's my baby. Barbie's my baby. I almost lost my life. And I would have never experienced true love like I do when I have my wife with me. And, you know, she got pregnant. I don't know how that happened, you know what I'm saying? And it was crazy. We were living in this little shoebox of apartment, bro. We didn't have much, but we had us, and that was enough. Food is food, and air is air, and water is water. You know what I'm saying? We all got what we need. And I remember sitting in this house in Media, and it was a shoebox. You could fry an egg, you know, wash your clothes, and take a shower at the same time. You know what I mean? But it was like crazy. I ain't going front. We loved each other, but it was getting to be a little much. You know what I'm saying? I mean, could you just imagine me in like a little smaller box than this? You'd be like, geez. That's why I think this thing was a bad idea. You guys would be like, oh, my God. You know, so so one time she was like, "Yo, my water broke." And I was like, oh, my gosh. And so we're hopping in my car February 15th. I'll never forget it. I'm flying down Township Line. And in Delco, there used to be this thing called the Summit Inn. Yeah, it's not the nicest place. And I wouldn't encourage you to go there. But there's these trolley tracks there. And underneath these trolley tracks, I used to live under there. And I wanted to jump in front of a trolley. I wanted to kill myself so many times. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And now, you fast forward, I'm unafraid and ready to live. Not just ready to live, but ready to give, ready to bring my unborn child into this world. And I'll never forget it. I was going over to the bridge, and I was like, "Barbie?" And she's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Did you know that underneath this bridge?" She says, "Today's my day, damn it!" In true alcoholic fashion, I'm trying to steal the shine from a pregnant lady. I'm very good at that. I'm like, "Yeah, you're right. We'll save this one." She knows it very well now. You know, then we had our first son, my second son. He was about to be born, and I only got a few minutes left, so I want to talk about these things. And I became a pastor at the only church that I ever been to in my life, other than the pizza one. I went to this church one time in Delaware County, walked in, never left. And I was voted in to be their pastor. There was like a 75 people in the building at the time that voted, and I got zero no's. Crazy, right? Because God is a fan of the underdog. He used the least extraordinary people to do extraordinary things. I'm living proof of that. It's the truth. And my son Paxton was about to be born. My wife was 9 months pregnant. And this is a good one because I haven't seen my dad in a long, long time. And my first sermon was on a Sunday, obviously. And so this is Saturday night. And my wife calls me from upstairs. We lived in a house now, praise God. A lot of these things you'll accumulate over time. And I picked up the phone, and she's like, "I'm upstairs." It was like late night. I was like, "What's wrong?" She's like, we got to go to the hospital." She was like, "It's time." And I was like, "Geez, right now?" I didn't say that. You know what I mean? But I was thinking, I'm like, you know, tomorrow's my first sermon, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a big day for me. But I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I'm still married. I'm not going to tell her this was recorded, Pop. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, so I rush her to the hospital, false alarm. I get home. It was late Sunday now. I mean, it was early Sunday morning. And I bring up the steps, and my phone rings, and it was a Florida number. And I answer it, and it was my dad, my biological dad on the other end, who I haven't spoke to in like 12 years. And he was given 72 hours to live. His liver shut down from this disease. And we had this amazing experience. And he was talking about, you know, asking for forgiveness. And I've had this experience through the steps. How can I not forgive somebody else? And he was like, I'm afraid to die. And I got to be there with him and walk him through that process. And at the end, he said, "I love you." And he asked me for forgiveness. I said, you're forgiven. And I told him that I love him too. Only a direct result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous could I be able to say that. I preached my sermon on a Sunday, crushed it. And yeah, you know what I'm saying? I'll give you that. I'm still back there. Crushed it. Yeah, I still got this ego pride. I ain't going front. But whatever. I'm going to preach it. And so, you know, I crushed my sermon on a Sunday. My son was born on a Monday, and my dad died the very next day. All three in a row. And I always remember going through it. It's around August is when this all happened. August 28th, 29th, whatever. And I was always thinking, why me, God? Why me? Why all this? And I was reading my Bible as I always do. Praise God for that. I'm into the Word. And God spoke to me. And the Bible says, to whom much is given, much is required. And I'm here to tell you, I've been given a lot. I've been given way more than I deserve. To whom much is given, much is required. But the greatest thing that I have been given is to have the obsession of alcohol removed from me. It's that serious. It is that imperative that we get the newcomer. Because I know what people are capable of. I have nowhere to look outside of myself, first and foremost. I'm not that bright. I can mess up ice cubes. But man, oh man, what a life I'm living. Coming up on 12 years later. And I think, you know, the best years of my life are yet to come. That's what the book says. The best years of your life are yet to come. And I'm just grateful to be alive. Before the 12 steps, love was just a word. Now it's a way of life. Thank you for letting me share.